So welcome, everyone, to call 4 of Product Launch Formula 2.1 Plus. For those of you on the webcast, you can actually follow along with our slides here. For everyone listening in on the phone, you can't see the slides, but later on you're going to be able to ask questions. We'll open it up and we'll be able to take one-on-one questions. So let's get started right away. Okay, for the first question is, after reviewing the Mortgage Web Success launch, I don't seem to see a story being used. Am I missing something? And this is a good question. Basically, I've told you a lot about the story. And, we've worked through, we've spent a lot of time working on the story and how important that is in your marketing. But when you're coming out with a brand new product, especially if it's somewhat revolutionary, a lot of times that the product really is the story. Of course, you're looking to touch your prospects and create a relationship with them. And so if you look at the Mortgage Web Success, I mean, the story really is that Brian is a guy who isn't computer savvy at all, but he was able to hook up with people that were computer savvy and put together this really groundbreaking system for loan officers. So, I mean, that's the story. Your stories don't have to be super complicated, or they shouldn't be super complicated. They don't have to be super involved, and especially if it's a new product and a fairly revolutionary product, then it makes the story much less significant. So that's the story in Mortgage Web Success. It's like, hey, I'm not a computer guy. I'm sort of a technophobe, but I know they're good for my business, so I got to know some people that really do know computers, and I told them what the perfect website would be for a loan officer. So they helped me create a system that will do that automatically for you, and now you can have this automatic system that's going to build your business. So the I'm a lot like you would be Brian saying, hey, I'm a lot like you. I'm not some computer wizard, but just like you, I know that I need to get online and put my business online and build a website if I want my business to succeed. And so that was the story. It doesn't have to be super complicated. In fact, it shouldn't be super complicated. Okay, next question. This is from Carlo. I'd like to shorten all my squeeze pages and do them more as cut to the chase. Do you agree? Or are long presentations essential to any launch? Long presentations aren't essential, and there's a saying in copywriting, and you should apply this to your launch as well, that copy cannot be too long, it can only be too boring. It's a simple saying, but there's a lot of truth there. Copy can never be too long, it can only be too boring. So you want your copy to basically be long enough to make the sale. If it's a squeeze page, the sale is simply getting them to opt in. So you need it to be long enough to get them to opt in. It could be very, very short. I've seen effective squeeze pages lately that, have probably 30 or 40 words of text. Now, that was a page that was driving people to a teleseminar, so people that were already on a list were getting driven to another list to join a teleseminar. So since they were already on a list, there's already a relationship, and you could dispense with a lot of the text. I'm getting a little sidetracked there with that little piece, but basically, the real question, Carlo, is that it doesn't matter what you think about how long the copy should be. It doesn't matter what I think. It matters what's the most effective. The real way to do this is to test it, and squeeze pages are a great way to test. You can do the best way is through a split test. The second best way is to put it up for a while and see what the results are and then change it and see if the results change. But basically, it's really great. Neither of us has to sit here and try to come up with a definitive answer. You just test it. But when you're creating the squeeze page, you got to tell you have to make the sale, which is basically you're telling people what they need to know to make the decision to go ahead and opt in. And that's where you start. From there, you go with testing results. Now, I know, like, my 6 and 7 site, that's got a really long, long, long squeeze page. I put that up years and years ago, and it tested out really well years ago. Literally, I think it was in 2003. I haven't touched that site in years, so I don't even know if it's still converting. I know it was back then. The page on productlaunchformula.com, that converts really well. That's got very little text, and then it's got and then it's got the video, and then it has some text below it. And to tell you the truth, in my testing, that text below it made no difference. I could take that text off of there, or I could leave it on, and it just didn't affect the testing. The headline affected the testing. The little bit of copy over to the right of the video affected affected the results. The picture at the on the video affected the results, but the copy down below really didn't. So, Carl, you might be right. Going short could work. I would also test going with go using video on your opt-in page. This one's from John. Looking at some of the recent launches, Kearns, Info Millionaire, Arbitrage Conspiracy, Ebbins Altitude, the pre-launch is less than 10 days. Is this a new development and why? Yes, it's a new development in the internet marketing space. And the reason is that because the launches are so successful, there are just so many launches going on right now that if you want to capture the attention and sort of dominate the attention and keep people's keep them engaged, but more importantly keep partners engaged, then people are moving to shorter and shorter launches. So that's specific to the IM, the internet marketing space. So if you're selling stuff about how to make money online, then in the last about 4 months, people have been going to much shorter launch cycles with, about 10 days. So, it's a new development, and that's why it is. If you're in other niches, you don't have to do that. You don't have to compress your launch. I mean, you might want to if you don't have that much launch content. The real key in your pre-launch cycle is you have to stay interesting. So if you've only got like two good pieces of pre-launch content, well, then maybe a 10-day pre-launch is good. If you've got three or four good pieces of pre-launch content, maybe it's 3 or 4 weeks. Because, you have to keep your market engaged. You don't want to put out something really good and then have the market sit there, wait for 10 days for your next piece of content. So a lot of it, on your pre-launch, if you're not in the make money online niche, you can basically do it however long you want. And if you look at some of the schedules, some of the information I've already given you on how to lay out those schedules, you'll get a good idea. But basically, the one key thing is you don't want to be boring. You want to keep people engaged. And so if you've got the pre-launch content, then you could easily do a longer pre-launch. And remember, the intensity increases as you go through the pre-launch. You might release one piece of content and then not release the next piece of content for 5 or 6 days, but then the next time you probably want to go 4 days, and the next time 3 days. And then by then you might be into the last few days in your launch, and then you're really starting to focus on your offer. So that's sort of the way it goes. The pacing and the intensity increases as you go throughout your pre-launch. And remember, in your last 3 to 5 days, you really start to move away from just pre-launch content, and you really start to focus on explaining what your offer is. Too many times people get caught up in their pre-launch content and giving great stuff, and then when it gets right down to it, then it's like the day before the launch, and people don't know what you're launching. You got to start telling them about your product and why it's important and answering those objections very explicitly in those last 3 to 5 days before launch. Okay, next question. From George, your thoughts. In developing my seed launch, I see clients one-to-one, for which I charge a high hourly rate. As part of my sessions, I throw in the first teleseminar series, etc. This can be promoted as an exclusive series with my VIP clients who pay X dollars per hour. So technically, they're paying clients that have had the teleseminar as part of their sessions. This is in the hypnosis market. Hope this all makes sense. Also, pre-launch content. If it's totally a new product, what are best ways to form social proof? Would it be to build authority/expertise in a marketplace like the Smarts launch? The real way to do this, the seed launch, this is the deal with the seed launch. The seed launch is with people that are already pre-sold. So if these are clients you've already seen one-on-one, they're already pre-sold. Now you come back and you say, I've got this really cool thing about this, about this whatever, about this piece, this new thing I found about hypnosis. So you're coming back and you're teaching them more stuff. And the whole deal with this, you know, if you can get them to pay for it, that's better. If not, that's okay. The deal with the seed launch is that is what you use to create the social proof. So say you've taken, you've done one-on-one work with them, they've gotten some teleseminars, now you're getting ready to put, you know, I don't know the hypnosis market, but let's say you're going to do a three-part teleseminar series as your seed launch to, you know, talk about, you know, how you can hypnotize yourself while you're driving your car, just to be completely silly here. Okay, so this is new information. You do the three teleseminars. You do it just like I taught in the seed launch. You solicit their feedback, their questions, their opinions each step of the way. Take those people through the seed launch. Now, these are your people that have already seen you. They're already pre-sold, so it's not going to be hard getting them on the calls. Get them on the calls, deliver the great content, survey them. Then after the fact, you go back and you survey them and you ask them for testimonials and you work with them to hopefully that they can get results, and that creates your social proof. The people in your seed launch create the social proof. That's one of the principal reasons why you're doing a seed launch, is to create that social proof. Okay, next question. Okay, from Chuck. Chuck says, I ask a lot of questions, and I really appreciate you taking the time to address my earlier questions in a call. So here's his new questions. Where in the launch sequence does raise your hand opt-in for the sublist go? It would tip your hand that there's a launch coming, so wouldn't it have to wait until near the end of pre-launch? No. I mean, the deal with, you know, you're not trying to be deceptive and hide that a launch is going on. And, you know, this varies from launch to launch. But basically, you're going to email your list and tell them that, you know, first you do that pre-launch, you think something's coming. At that point, you can ask them to join your launch list. You know, people have been asking me for this for a long time. People have been asking me for this, you know, how to hypnotize yourself while you're driving your car. They know that I do this. They think it's really cool. They've been wanting to know how I do it. So I finally decided I'm going to be creating a product about this. So, I just wanted to give you a quick heads up. If you want to know more information about this, you know, go to this link and, you know, just opt into this priority notification list so I can tell you about it as we get closer. So you can do that in a pre-launch, or it could be your first piece of pre-launch content sent to your main list, and that would be, you know, hey folks, you know, I'm getting really close to finishing up my, you know, hypnotize yourself while you're driving course, and I'm going to be releasing some little chunks of the course, some really cool stuff. You know, I've got a couple of videos, a couple of audios, and I've also created this list, this priority notification list. If you want to get on it, go here now and sign up. And then, you're promising some content, either that or send them something that's like, hey folks, I got a really cool video I put together for you. Go check it out now. And then you send them the video, and the video could be you talking about your new, you know, about what you've learned about hypnotizing yourself while you're driving your car. And, you know, walk them through the video, give them some good pieces. At the end of the video, it says, by the way, I'm coming out with a course on this. And, you know, if you're interested in, you know, go to the bottom of this page and opt in. So there's a lot of different ways to do it, but it's not like you're trying to be deceptive. A lot of times, you know, you will give a few pieces of content before you sort of drop the bomb, but it's better, and generally it's better to hint at it along the way, let them know that something's coming. Okay, second question from Chuck. If you're doing an internal launch, where in the sequence do you do things like testing the headline on your sales page, testing the price? Basically, those things, they are very difficult to test in the sequence. The headline isn't too hard. I mean, throughout the pre-launch, you're gathering feedback from the market about their big obstacles, their big hot buttons, and that's what you use to write the headline. Then you could do a split test in your headline even as traffic's coming in on launch day. For really, really big launches, I don't do that because I worry about server load in terms of A/B tests. But for like an internal launch, it's easy to do like a split test on the headline as traffic's coming in on launch day. Generally, that can work really well. Now, in terms of testing the price, in most markets, it's really hard to do that in one of these launches because what happens is these days people are hitting your page multiple times often. They're often using multiple email addresses. Often these people are connected, you know, in forums or Twitter or whatever. So if there's different prices being displayed to people, they'll find out. People start talking. that can lead to an ugly situation. So if you're going to price test for one of these, you're probably going to want to do that ahead of time using something like AdWords. So you'd probably go and create a hidden page in your site with the sales letter and drive people to it using AdWords. Now during or whatever pay-per-click. Now during the launch, you're probably going to see higher conversion than you'll see with pay-per-click or AdWords or Yahoo AdWords or whatever. But it's not important that you're making a ton of money with pay-per-click, but it's what you're looking for is data on pricing. Okay, next question. This is from Sandra. She has a whole bunch of questions here, so we'll go through them quick. In the list building 202 video, you discuss writing keyword-focused blog posts. Am I correct in assuming you would follow the same rules for writing articles? For example, easing articles. Yeah, pretty much. That's what you're doing. Generally, you want the title of the blog post to be whatever keyword phrase you're going after. You want to use that keyword phrase in your first sentence of your first paragraph. You probably want three or four paragraphs, anywhere from 200 to 500 words. You want to repeat that phrase in each paragraph or similar phrases in each paragraph. You probably definitely want to have it in the last paragraph. So those are some basic rules for writing keyword-focused blog posts. Next question, what's the best way to get someone from your blog to your squeeze page? Do you continually mention a free report in your blogs? Yeah, you do. And also, what works good for blogs are those the pop-ups, the DHTML pop-ups. And you can get those free with Profollow or AWeber. That's part of the Profollow service is the pop-ups that come up on the blog post after people have been on your page for whatever 10 or 15 or 20 seconds. Is the squeeze page on a separate website or is it the same website? Yes, it's the same website. I like to put my blog up on whatever your website is .com. Your website.com/blog is where I usually put the blog. And then the squeeze page I'll usually put on the index page. But you could turn that around. You could put the blog on the index, have the blog be on the main page. And then blog page on the main page, and then have a squeeze page somewhere else, on the same domain, just slash squeeze.html. I probably wouldn't use the name squeeze, but you can use anything there. Next question, what software do you use for the site that we download our modules from? Is it AMember? Yes, it is AMember. That's not to be confused with AWeber. They're very close, but they're not the same. AMember, AMEMBER, is a relatively inexpensive membership site program. Then Sandra asks, are there templates in AMember, or do you need to know HTML code? To tell you the truth, I don't know. I didn't set up the site at all. I had someone else set it up for me. I think it's pretty bare bones. You sort of need your own HTML code. Next question, when you send out the sales letter on launch day, do you have someone write the HTML code for the letter and send it via Profollow, or are there templates that you can just quickly edit in Profollow? Okay, what you want to do, you don't send your sales letter via email. You send them a really short email that says, okay, we're now live, here's the link. And then give them the link, and then the link takes them to the sales letter on your site. So you definitely don't want to send a sales letter via email. And on launch day, that email you send to your list is a really short email. It's like, hey, folks, it's basically, hey, folks, we're now live. I know lots of people are really excited about this, click now and go buy it. That was pretty lousy copy I just spoke. We'd be, hey, folks, we've been waiting for this a long time. We're finally live. Here's the link. Go there now. That could be, just some super short, literally 10, 15, 30 words at the max. Okay, next question is from Jason. How much do I cover in my first piece of pre-launch content? It seems like it needs to be on a squeeze page, right? If so, it seems like it needs to be short, compelling, entertaining, with a strong call to action and a high perceived value. But you also say to give them your best stuff. Is it enough to show proof and build character and relationship and then tell them you'll give them the outline of how you got your results in the next video? Yeah, that's what you do. It's basically the first video, now it really depends, there's a difference between whether it's your list, if it's built for your list, or if it's built for your partner's list. If it's built for your partner's list, there probably has to be a little more background, to show that the authority, to show that you know what you're talking about and it's worth them opting in. So you're basically teasing them. You're giving them some really good stuff and promising them more good stuff. And when I say you give out your best stuff, I'm talking cumulative for the whole launch. I'm not saying that, you give them a two-hour video and day one of pre-launch that gives every little piece of, your absolute best stuff. You do come out hitting the biggest pain point, the most compelling pain point, the thing that they're going to be most interested in. Use that as your first topic. But you only give part of it on the squeeze page, and they have to get opt-in to get, like, the whole video or the whole piece of pre-launch content. Okay, next question is from Jeff. I notice on your squeeze page at productlaunchformula.com that you're not asking for the first name, only a field for an email address. Why? Also, is the new landing page design tested and the best format to use? I went to just using the dropping it from the name to just the email address because we're getting higher opt-ins, about 10% higher. Just asking for the email address. Now, you're going to want to test that in your market. You know, that's what's working for me in this market right now. The other important piece is I don't really use the first name when I don't personalize. I don't say, like, hey, Tom, go check this out now. And I definitely don't use the personalization in the subject line because basically I think when I'm writing email, I want it to look like personal email. I want it to look like the personal emails I get. And I can't remember ever getting, it's been a long time since I got a personal email from a friend that said, hey, Jeff, whatever, in the subject line. People just don't tend to write emails like that. And, in fact, a lot of the emails you get, there isn't even a salutation. A lot of the emails I get, maybe it's just my friends, but a lot of times there's no salutation at all. The other thing is in the Internet marketing space, a lot of the people opting in, they won't put their real first name. They'll put some bogus first name or they'll put in a tracking code for first name. And so when you say hi, first name, and their first name is, some weird thing that they're using as a tracking code, well, it's jarring right off the bat right there. So I don't like to use personalization, so I don't really need it on my list, and I'm getting a higher conversion without it. So that's why I'm only asking for an email address. Now, that the my squeeze page and product launch formula is, I tested extensively, and it's working really well. How well it works is really dependent on the source of the traffic that's coming in. But with, endorsed JV traffic, it's getting 42 to 46%, depending on who's sending traffic. That's a pretty good conversion rate, especially in the Internet marketing space, which is a very, very crowded market. It was tested extensively. I did all kinds of testing of that page. Now, whether it works for you in your niche, I don't know. I think it's a good place to start. Whether it's the best format to use, I mean, that's pretty we'll never know what's best. And when we do figure out what's best, that'll probably be best for a couple of weeks until something else comes along. But I do know that design's working really well. I think I came up with that design. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that's my design. But it's being used by lots and lots of people now. All kinds of people have been knocking it off. So I guess they're having success as well. Next question, as I grab a drink of water here. So this next question is from Michael. With a seed launch, when you send your first email asking for questions and you receive the questions, do you reply back to the person sending you the question? It depends. Usually I don't. Usually they understand. A lot of times I'll put in text that says something along the lines of, send me your question. I can't guarantee I'll respond to everyone, but I do guarantee I'll read all of your responses. So I put something in there just so they aren't expecting a response. If I get I do try to reply to email. I get just incredible, insane amounts of email, but I do try to respond. And, you know, even out of the blue, someone I don't know, I'll often respond to. If you're sending me a question, just note that you're a product launch formula owner, and the odds that you're going to get a response go way up, dramatically up. But in this case, generally, with most of the launches I do, I'm getting so many responses that I'm not replying. Now, if you do one of these and you get, say, 20 responses, well, then go ahead and respond to those people. Even if it's just, hey, thanks for the question, I'll do my best to answer this, you know, in the next week or so, something along that lines. You know, you don't have to type out a big, long answer to every question. But if you just acknowledge that you got their question, then you're going to be putting together a response and you're going to send it out to everyone. That's not, you know, if you have a manageable number of responses, that's not a bad way to go. Okay, next question from U. Oh, how do I pronounce this? UWE from UA. That's what we're going to go with, in Las Vegas. I have doubts about my chosen niche. Is there a commercial viability for info products in my niche? Here are the parameters. It's a health/medical-related market. It's non-life-threatening condition affecting about 3% of the population. And then just to editor's note, I cut out a lot of details because he went on forever here. Market research results, strong direct keyword search count and ratios. I'm not sure what he means by ratios. Only a few active forums. AdWords surveys yield only two responses. Demand, there's no existing customer list. Competition, lots of physical medical products and procedures. A few badly written ebooks with almost identical content sold through affiliate networks. No continuity products or services, no paid membership sites, no paid online or physical multimedia courses, no active podcasts. This is sounding a little bit like red flags are going off, especially the running the AdWords survey and there's only two responses. That's sort of alarming. One thing you can do in this type of situation is you can actually go ahead and join, since the ebooks are being sold through affiliate networks, go ahead and become an affiliate and try to sell those products and test the conversion. Even if this costs you money, you can go buy AdWords and send traffic to an affiliate site promoting these products. See, you know, and then track it. Track your traffic and track your conversions. That will give you an idea whether people are buying. Now, if the sites are really poorly done, they have really lousy sales letters, well, you're probably going to get a higher conversion than those people are getting, or if you can put together a better offer. But, I mean, that's a really good way to get really solid data to see if anyone's buying stuff. Just drive some traffic to those affiliate products and see what's happening in terms of conversion. You can also, I mean, you can build a list. You build your list that way. You might even be able to break even on your list costs. So, like, use AdWords, drive them to your site, get them to opt in, you know, on a squeeze page, and then from the list, use that list to sell them on the affiliate products. Okay, next question from Walter in Raleigh. I was asking how you deal with comments on a blog, if it's okay to delete a few of them or leave them there. You want to moderate your blog, and I'm not sure if Walter's asking this, but I mean, if there's offensive comments or spam comments or just comments you don't like, it's your blog. You own the website. You can go ahead and delete them. So also, I was thinking about old blog articles from previous launches. Do you leave them published during the next launch or hide them? In my case, from the old articles, you can get a lot of the story and what I'm going to do during the pre-launch sequence. The last launch I did, where people were at different knowledge levels depending if they read the past articles or not. It was kind of a problem, and I wish I did not have those old articles still published. At the same time, I thought, it is social proof, and it's still marketing material. I don't know what's more important, not having people contaminated with the old stuff still published, or keeping the social proof element. The social proof will be reproduced during the new launch anyway, so I don't know how important it is to have it immediately. Yeah, Walter, what you want to do in this case, and so what he's talking about is he did a launch earlier, had a blog posts, had blog comments, and now he's about to do another launch. He's wondering about, you know, if he sends people to that blog, they're going to be able to see everything. They're going to be, you know, once they start poking around the blog, they're going to be able to see all the old posts, the old comments, and so on. And in general, in this situation, this is what I just did with Product Launch Formula 2. You know, last spring I launched Product Launch Formula 2.0. Now I'm launched, you know, a month ago I launched Product Launch Formula 2.1. What I did was I didn't delete the post, but basically in WordPress you can take the old posts and you can make them, I think they call them private. So you change them from being public to being private, and then no one can see them. The only people that can see them are administrators, you know, you and the other people you gave administrative privileges to. So that's essentially what I did. I actually took the old blog posts. I just created new blog. I set those to private. Then I took the text, the copy I used from those old blog posts, and I created new blog posts. And you'll end up getting, you know, new comments, and that will be your social proof for the new launch. Now, in this case, you know, I used a much more elaborate launch process last spring, so I had a lot more comments. So, you know, a typical blog post might have 200 comments, and this time around I might only have 80 or 100 comments, but that just doesn't matter. So, yeah, the best thing to do is start with a clean slate, new blog posts. You can use the same copy you used last time around, but that keeps it all clean. Okay, next question. From George in Port Chester, New York. If I sign up for lunarpages.com, do I just use their template capability, or is there another way to build web pages I'm missing? I have a new Mac, and I'm just learning it. Is it really worth hiring a company to design it? Okay, Lunar Pages, that's one of those web hosts that I said I use. And, you know, there's no affiliate link. I don't get anything. I've just had pretty good service with those guys. And, you know, it's, I think for 8 or 10 or 12 bucks a month, you can get a pretty darn nice website package. I wouldn't use their template capability. I don't know what it is, to tell you the truth. I just build my own pages. I obviously, if you look at my pages, they're so plain and ugly. I don't have much skill at all at building web pages, but I'm able to hack my way through it. I use Dreamweaver, which is probably overkill. That's the web page program is Dreamweaver. It's probably overkill for 90% of you. If anyone has suggestions, they want to tell me for both Mac and for Windows for HTML programs, go ahead and, you know, fire off an email or leave a comment here in the Q&A form, because I've been stuck. I mean, I used Dreamweaver for years. So it's been a while since I've gone out there and taken a look at what programs are available. But there's a lot of them, and some of them are even free. But then the second part of this, is it worth hiring a design company? Generally, no. Most of the design companies are going to charge you some stupid amount of money. You know, people quote $5,000, $10,000. I mean, this should be $100 or $200. If you're doing a real basic squeeze page, it should be very inexpensive. If you're doing a more elaborate design, you're still under $1,000 generally. It's just you don't have to get ultra fancy. Usually a design company, they're a design company because they like to design fancy stuff, and you're not looking for fancy stuff. Let me see. Where else was I going? One other thing you can do, go to 99designs.com, I think is the website, and there you can actually put up a job and have people bid on it. 99 Designs, I think, is the name. If I'm wrong, then I'll try to send out the correct URL in an email later on. Okay, second part. Also, I'd like to start using lunarpages.com, but they don't offer an affiliate commission capability. Should I sign up for ClickBank? So I'm assuming here you want to sell your own products and offer affiliates commissions. And ClickBank, if it's an ebook, if it's an electronic product, ebook or a downloadable audio or video, ClickBank can be good for that, and it can help you find affiliates as well. Other ideas, probably the easiest I don't know if it's the easiest, but the most common solution beyond beyond ClickBank would be one shopping cart, and use the number one, and then shoppingcart.com, and they have sort of an end-to-end solution for, you know, affiliate management and product delivery. Okay, next question from Jason in Columbia. Can you talk about delivering your first piece of pre-launch content versus whatever you do in pre-launch? Where does the shot across the bow fit? Since we survey our membership site list and autoresponder right after they opt in, I'm not clear on how to implement an additional survey for pre-launch or even exactly what I would ask since I already cover it as people join my list. What would you do in this case for pre-launch? Skip it. Pre-launch is just when, you know, before you really start putting out pre-launch content, and there you're just, the shot across the bow is just a short email letting them know that you've been working on something and you're really excited to be sharing with them, and, you know, you're going to be giving them details later on. Strictly speaking, you don't need to do a pre-launch. I just like to do it because it puts the idea in play, gets it out there, gets them thinking. I like the survey part of it as much for the interaction it creates as for the data. So if you're doing a survey all along, well, congratulations, Jason. You're doing a good job. I'm glad to hear that. But you still might want to do that pre-launch and think of some other way to draw. You can still ask the question, you know, I'm finished this thing. I'm just finishing it up now. I just want to make sure I've got everything covered. What do you think is the most important thing that I need to cover in this product about, you know, hypnotizing yourself while you're learning to drive? You know, just it gets the interaction going, gets them thinking that you're interested in what they have to say. You could just do it and just let them know that you're really, really excited about this, and it's going to be coming. You'll let them know more information later, and then you can go on and talk about something else in the email. But I do, like I said, it's not strictly required, but I do like having that pre-launch out there. Okay, next question, and I think this might be our last question. From Leela in Houston, our dog training has three areas of importance: puppy training, obedience, behavior modification. Puppy training needs relatively fast response. Should we have a product for all three? If we do a product just for puppies, that might only be a 7-day launch at most. I think it sounds like you've got three different products, or at least two different products. You know, the puppy one and then the other one could be obedience and behavior modification, but I think you probably want all three. The deal is, I think with these products, you're probably going to want them out there, at least the puppy product, you want it out there permanently. So, you know, you can do the launch now. Yeah, probably a 7-day launch makes sense because, you know, people, they've got puppies. Those puppies are getting older. I imagine you also sell a lot of stuff to people that are thinking about getting a puppy or about to get a puppy. So, you know, the timing isn't quite as critical for those people. But, yeah, I think for something like this, a 7-day launch sounds about right. And then after I launch, that's the type of product I would tend to leave sit on the market. There's other ones you might want to come and go with those, or you might want to launch them and leave them on the market. And let's see, I think, yep, that was the last question we've got, the last slide we've got. So now if you're on the phone and you wanted to ask a question, go ahead and press *1, and that was basically the equivalent of you raising your hand, and then I'll be able to see you and I'll be able to call on you. So while people are going ahead and hitting their *1, I'm going to go ahead and grab a drink of water.